Studies show that 100% of everybody in the world wants to curl up indoors and do nothing because it's so darn cold out there. That's why many people are turning to Bombas, whose pillowy plush slippers and warm merino wool socks have been said to be the most comfortable in the history of feet. Bombas products have been found to boost coziness by up to 1 million percent. Okay, enough fake statistics, but could Bombas socks and slippers really be the cure? Go to bombas.com/audio and use code audio for 20% off your first purchase. That's BOMBAS.com and use code audio.
You're a pro at running your life, at committing to your workout, at showing up every day. At Bombas, we're pros too. Pros at making socks. Our sport assortment has specialized socks for whatever sport you're committed to. Running, hiking, golf, Pilates, and so much more. Made with sweat-wicking yarns, blister-fighting details, and targeted arch support. Bombas Sport is pro-level socks from the pros of socks. For another pro, you. Go to bombas.com/audio and use code audio for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com and use code audio. You're a pro at running your life, at committing to your workout, at showing up every day. At Bombas, we're pros too. Pros at making socks. Our sport assortment has specialized socks for whatever sport you're committed to. Running, hiking, golf, Pilates, and so much more. Made with sweat-wicking yarns, blister-fighting details, and targeted arch support. Bombas Sport is pro-level socks from the pros of socks. For another pro, you. Go to bombas.com/audio and use code audio for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com and use code audio.
All right, what's up, everyone? Welcome to the Wildcast Podcast. I'm Justin Spears here with Micah Lev. Thank you guys for listening to us on Apple, Spotify, maybe even Tucson.com if you're watching the video version. Also, the Wildcaster app. Our videos are on the mobile app as well. Make sure you download that, get a subscription, get all the fun stuff. We're going to be talking all things Arizona football. We'll put a bow on the 2025 season and also kind of look at 2026. There's a lot of things to address, Lev. Opt-outs of the Holiday Bowl, the season itself, transfer portal. We got mailbag questions as well. We'll also just kind of take a look at the different position groups and how they performed this season. So lots to dive into on this episode of the Wildcast. How was your new year?
It was good. You know, we stayed home on New Year's Eve. We had at one point in time thought about driving out to partway to San Diego anyway on New Year's Eve. But my older son wanted to go to a party, of course, and we all were wanted to watch Stranger Things pretty much as soon as it came out. So we stayed home. We drove out on the first, had a mostly nice time in San Diego. The weather was, you know, it was a little rainy and cool, but the temps were steadily in the 60s.
Yeah.
And I mean, I thought that they put on a pretty good show at Snapdragon Stadium. A lot of positive feedback about the stadium itself, a lot of stadium envy, I would say, from people who go to Arizona football games on a regular basis. Like, why can't we have one of those? But that is, of course, a complicated topic. How was yours, Justin? You were in San Diego for several days.
Yeah, it was good. Yeah, I went out there as soon as the Snoop Dogg Arizona Bowl ended. Went out the next day and drove out super early. So, yeah, I was out there for a little while. I have some folks that live there. My mom lives there. My opa, her dad, they both live in San Diego. So got to spend a little bit of time with them leading up to the bowl game. And then the bowl game happened and there was all sorts of drama surrounding the bowl game. I know that
there sure was
people who are listening to this podcast, they already know exactly what we're about to talk about and just kind of how the season ended. And I don't know. It was a weird deal. It was a weird deal because, you know, we were informed that those three guys were going to opt out. And then the program instructed us and told us, like, please.
Asked us.
Yeah. I wouldn't say they demand us. They asked us. And, you know, we value our relationships with Arizona football. And they said we would just really appreciate it if you guys kind of kept this under wraps just because there's no mandatory availability report. And SMU, they're not revealing anything. And they had opt-outs too. They had a couple of important players decide to sit out of the Holiday Bowl. but they asked us to, you know, make sure, you know, to keep the competitive advantage because they don't want to give SMU a heads up to scheme up a game plan to really expose Arizona's secondary. And come to find out, that's exactly what happened in the first half. So kudos to Rhett Lashley and the SMU staff for smelling blood in the water and capitalizing on that early. But, you know, the guys that decided to opt out were Traydon Stukes, Genesis Smith, and Dalton Johnson. And pretty much, you know, Lev, going into this game, I knew maybe one of those guys was going to opt out. And the one guy in particular that I was kind of, you know, trying to figure out if he was going to opt out or not was Traydon Stukes. And, you know, Traydon and or his family told me that he was going to opt out. And he was like, or they told me, please don't let anybody know. If you want to, you know, report this information, I would ask for the program. I would ask the program first. And so I did. And of course, what do you think the program told me? So I was just under the impression that it was only Stukes that was going to opt out. And then I arrived to Holiday Bowl practice, and all of a sudden I see two additional players not practicing, and that is Genesis Smith and Dalton Johnson. And I was like, whoa, okay. That's their choice. That's what they decided to do. And, you know, these guys, they're NFL prospects. I didn't think, you know, Genesis Smith made the right choice by declaring for the NFL draft. I would have come back, especially in today's college landscape where you're making a boatload of money. Like, there's no doubt in my mind that Genesis Smith, if he came back to Arizona in 2026, he would be the highest paid player on the defense. Heck, he's probably the highest paid player on the defense in 2025, even with those other guys. But he decided to make that call. And Genesis is a projection. He's got a really high ceiling. Like, it would not surprise me if Genesis carved out a nice career in the NFL.
He got invited to the Senior Bowl.
Well, I was just going to say, so, I was surprised by him opting out because I'm like, well, he doesn't have anything leading up to the draft. Like, he doesn't have any showcases. I mean, really, the only thing is Big 12 Pro Day. So I'm like, all right, Genesis, that's your decision. But like you said, Lev, he was just invited to the Senior Bowl. And for those that don't know, the Senior Bowl is such a valuable thing for NFL draft prospects because you're just in this, you're essentially like in a snow globe of NFL coaches and GMs and high profile people. And you're talking to people every single day. You're practicing, you're working out, you're in the Senior Bowl game itself.
It's a job interview.
100%. Absolutely. Yep. And so, and Dalton Johnson, he's got the East-West Shrine Bowl coming up as well. So those three guys, they all have pre-draft stuff that they can look forward to. And so I can see why those guys decided to opt out. I know Arizona fans, they're pissed off by the timing of it because of the decision, right? It's like, you guys could have told us a couple weeks ago and we wouldn't have spent all this money to go out to San Diego for the Holiday Bowl, but instead we're finding out as we're walking into the stadium. And that part, I empathize with the Arizona fans. I understand the frustration. I completely get it. But on the other side of the coin, I get those guys too.
So I was just looking this up. Jordan Morgan opted out of the Alamo Bowl at the end of the 2023 season, similar to Traydon Stukes. You know, he had a major knee injury earlier in his career. He was also, you know, a first or second, at worst case, second round pick. He made that announcement 3 weeks before the Alamo Bowl. Those stories came out on December 8th, and the game was December 28th. That was, I think, his decision to do that. I think he announced it on Instagram. Not a big social media guy, Jordan, but no. So it was known. Like, so the timing of it was different. Like, there are people, I think, Justin, who still think that these defensive backs sprung it on the coaches at the last minute. That is not true.
No.
They had 2 to 3 weeks of advance notice. So I think that just something kind of got lost in translation because of the timing of how and when we reported it. And then I've mentioned this before, but the fact that they all are part of the same position group.
Yeah.
Like, you couldn't like spread out the pain at all, right? It was all in the same spot. The number one strength of the entire team, right, is pass defense. These guys are the probably the, you know, three of the biggest reasons that their pass defense is so good. And it really, you know, dealt a damaging blow to their depth at that position, their experience, their playmaking, all of those things. We saw it play out in the first half. There might have been a handful of people who would have canceled their trips to San Diego. Honestly, I don't think very many would have, right? I mean, you're going for the experience, the tailgating, the parade, right? The whole bowl, the good time that, yep, that is associated with a trip to San Diego and going to a bowl game. Maybe they would have. I feel bad for any fans who feel like they were misled in some way, but this is also the reality of modern college football.
Yep.
Right? I mean, this happens all the time everywhere. And honestly, if you only have three guys who opt out of a bowl game these days, that's actually pretty good.
Yep. Yeah, I feel for Arizona fans. I feel for you guys. I empathize with you. But you know, this is where we're at right now in the game. And hopefully, you know, there's more value in playing in bowl games. But you know, these guys, they also have, you know, futures to think about. And yeah, that's why in Stukes, when we brought him up, like, he was the guy that I wasn't surprised to opt out. You know, he's 15 months removed from a season-ending knee injury. And he had been relatively healthy, right, and until that knee injury. And it would have been commendable for him to go out there and end what he started. I mean, this guy was a walk-on, turned to a scholarship player, experienced the introduction of NIL and the transfer portal and all these other things.
Endured the 70-7 game.
A 20-game losing streak.
Yes, he was played in many of those games, yeah.
So yeah, like I just, you know, I think of Traydon Stukes and everything that he went through. And so, yes, it would have been nice to see him finish things off at Arizona, but okay, let's say he goes out there and he tears his ACL again. Can't play in the Senior Bowl.
Hey,
your stock plummets at that
point. Ty Buchanan like broke his foot or something in the first quarter of that game, who is a fringe prospect, but you know, someone who I think would at least get a look in a camp as an undrafted free agent situation. I mean, it's a reality of football, but he decided to play and look what happened to him.
Yeah.
Right. Like I think the same fans who feel mad about what happened with the defensive back should feel sorry for Ty Buchanan, right? Yeah. For suffering that injury. I'm going to write about this topic for our paper on Sunday. We're recording this on what day is today?
Just Thursday.
we're
getting back into
no idea what day it is. And I'm going to talk about the legacy of these players and whether it should be impacted by what they did. Just, you know, spoiler alert, no, it shouldn't. But something to look for on Tucson.com over the weekend.
Great careers, great legacies for all of those guys, right? All three. Dalton, Traydon definitely have more of a place in Arizona fans' hearts just because they've been here longer and they went through a lot of tough times. Genesis, you know, he came along when the times were getting good, right? Mm-hmm. When Arizona won 10 games.
On the upswing, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But then again, you know, he could have left. You know, he could have went to Washington. He could have went to a lot of other places. I'm sure there's a lot of teams in college football that would love to have them, a player like Genesis Smith, on their roster. And he stayed. So,
yeah, not to spoil a line in the column, but you wrote or you noted that those guys played 6,700 snaps for Arizona. You know how many snaps they played for other schools?
Zero.
Zero. When they get drafted or they play in the NFL and the graphic pops up on TV, what is it going to say by their name? That's going to say Arizona.
Or they
that should mean something.
Or they might follow the Katy High School trend. Millennium High School, Hamilton High School. But anyways, that was a big reason why SMU was able to go up 24-0. But then Redline accountability, execution that showed in the second half, that grit that they displayed in the second half. And that's what I think makes the Holiday Bowl such like a bittersweet experience for Arizona fans because, yeah, you lost 24-19, but man, this was looking like it was going to be even more disastrous than 33-0 against Nebraska in the 2009 Holiday Bowl. And the fact that Arizona was able to come back, outscore SMU 19-0 in the second half, a third straight opponent that SMU shut out, or that Arizona shut out an opponent in the second half. I mean, that fight, Noah Fifita, QB1, who's also coming back, like, there's something to be proud of if you're an Arizona fan, and you should be optimistic about next year.
Yeah, I think the fans were their anger switched from being mad at those players to being mad at Brent Brennan for some of his tactical maneuvers in the second half, right? Like,
yeah,
a lot of people were like, if he just did things a little differently, they could have tied the game.
Yeah.
And they are right, of course. It is hindsight's 20/20. It's easy to say it after the fact. We've gone over it multiple times. I've gone over it step by step. Like, I agreed with the first decision to go for two, because by the time they scored that first touchdown, there was only like 3 minutes left in the third quarter. Like, you got to get you. That's three scores. If you get the two, you're down by two scores. After that, there were a lot of moves where I feel like I would have gone the other way, but you know, you got to do what you think is right in the moment. But yeah. You know, if you left that game or you gave up on it, like, hey, shame on you, because they fought back. Third consecutive game in which they pitched a shutout in the second half. Just an absolutely crazy stat. They moved Javion Cole to safety. We haven't had a chance to ask anybody about this, but I'm just going to guess that I know he never played it in a game. I don't know whether he practiced there or not, but that was like super inventive. Like, great move by Danny Gonzalez to like, hey, we got to try something different here. And so they had basically four corners. It was like four corners, four linebackers, a safety, and two defensive linemen. That's how they were going about it. And they totally flummoxed Kevin Jennings in the second half. He threw three picks. Riley Wilson had an awesome game. I think he's someone who'll get some looks in the free agency market for the NFL, because he's a really good athlete and an instinctive football player. So yeah, very encouraging second half heading into the offseason.
My co-host on Spears and Ali, I like to believe that like Danny Gonzalez was just like, we're blowing up the plan. Give me the whiteboard. And it was like moving guys around. It was like, Cole, you're going to safety. And Ali was like, no. They practiced that all week. Like, they had a plan B or even a plan C just in case. I'm like, I don't know.
Probably.
Gonzalez was a madman in that sense.
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, he had to have gone over those assignments at some point, Javion Cole.
Yeah.
That is. Otherwise, like, you're like, what are my responsibilities on every given play? I mean, that would be impossible. So I'm guessing they at least like had it as a contingency, you know, in case things go wrong, which they obviously did. But, you know, good on them to prepare for every scenario.
Absolutely.
It's just, you know, it's just unfortunate that they hit a great, you know, SMU hit a great, well-executed trick play right at the start of the game, where I feel like almost anyone would have fallen victim to that. Like, the tight end did such a good job of, like, faking that he was going to block, getting outside on the kind of the wheel route concept with a double reverse in the backfield. And then, you know, they had a receiver making a ridiculous catch over the middle. They had another guy making a great play on the sideline. Like, they were balling in that first half. And it's entirely possible they would have – I don't think they would have had as much success. Clearly, they were picking on the replacements. But give at least some credit to SMU for just taking advantage of the whole situation.
So now Arizona, they go into the offseason feeling good about themselves with a 9-4 record in 2025. But let's look at, you know, some of the position groups and just kind of recap the 2025 season. You can find this on the Wildcaster app and Tucson.com. I did the postseason grades.
Yeah.
And I also had a midseason progress report. And, you know, some position groups improved in the second half of the season. Others just kind of maybe stay put or got worse. But let's start off with quarterbacks. And really, there's only one guy to talk about, and that's Noah Fifita, who set the single season touchdowns record with 29. He also passed Nick Foles and Willie Tuitama for the most career touchdown passes, all in the same season. 29 touchdowns and just 6 interceptions this year. Much different than last year where he tied for the most interceptions in the Big 12. So the Seth Diggy magic, it is real. And good news for Noah Fifita and good news for Arizona fans. Seth Diggy is set to come back. And so those guys, after making some magic this year, they get a whole offseason once again together and a whole season in 2026 together. So if you like what you saw out of Noah Fifita this year, maybe he evolves and continues to get better. Now, the one thing I will say about Noah that has really impressed me is his athletic ability and his kind of just his ability to get out of the pocket and avoid pressure. You know, Arizona, escapability. Like Arizona, I think they gave up like the third most sacks in the Big 12 this year, or they were definitely in the bottom half. And it could have been a whole lot more because Noah was able to just kind of spin around defenders and get away, scramble, and he set a career high in rushing yards, not only in that Holiday Bowl with 73, but he had a career high in rushing yards in the entire season. So I think that Noah Fifita, his evolution as a runner, making cleaner passes, maybe not having Tetaroa McMillan was good for him this year, and he was able to find some other receivers. He distributed the ball more in this offense than last offense. But then again, you know, last offense was just so broken. I think Noah had no other choice but to keep his eyes locked in on number four, and that is Tetaroa McMillan. So I was impressed with Noah Fifita this year, and I think next year he can stamp himself as the greatest quarterback in Arizona history if he hasn't already done that this year.
Yeah, I'm looking at his P2S percentage. That's pressure to sack percentage here on PFF, and it was okay. 16.4%. Like, just to put that in perspective, Brendan Sorsby, who's going from Cincinnati to Texas Tech this offseason, he was the best in the league at avoiding sacks at 6.1%. That means that, you know, out of 100 pressures, he's only getting sacked 6% of the time, just so people understand what that means. So, you know, Noah was at 16%. That's pretty solid. Anecdotally, though, as you mentioned, like, he had to make some great escapes, especially in this last game, missing, you know, both starting tackles. The pressure rate was high. I think it was over 36%. And he had to make stuff happen. And he did a really good job of that. And he did a better job this year of turning those situations into something positive versus just throwing the ball out of bounds. Remember, he led the nation in throwaways.
Throwaways, yep.
Last year, which was just like a weird, that's such a weird stat. It was a weird year. It was a weird offense. Just try to put that out of our minds and forget that it ever happened. But it's looking like, you know, if you look at his career, that's looking like the anomaly, right? Because it was sandwiched by two really, really good seasons. You gave Noah an A. I will agree with that grade.
Okay.
I think you nailed that one.
Also, Noah is the first quarterback since Bruce Hill in 1975 to receive first-team all-conference honors, which is crazy.
That is crazy.
Only three quarterbacks have had first-team all-conference honors. And the first guy, who could forget about Border Conference legend Ted Bland in 1933 to 1935. So, yeah, it was a banner year for Mr. Fifita. All right, now moving on to running backs. I gave them a B- grade, Lev. Am I a little too harsh on them?
Yeah, I think you are. When I do my weekly report cards, like, I usually kind of give the running back, unless they fumble or like blatantly blow a block on a blitz protection, like, I usually give them the benefit of the doubt because I feel like a lot of their success hinges on the offensive line and it hinges on how much they get the ball. I think the running backs did a good job of taking advantage of the opportunities that they had this year. Some really big, you know, big moments for Quincy Craig, Kedrick Risino, who was kind of banged up throughout the year, emerged as a red zone threat, and Ismail Mahdi was pretty effective. Showed he was more than just a speed guy, ran tough, late in the year. I think a B would have been a little bit more fair.
Okay.
Than a B minus, but I can understand it when you just look at the overall production. There wasn't like, wasn't overwhelming. There wasn't like a standout, like 1,000-yard rusher type of guy, but I think you're a little hard on him.
Okay. That's fair. Well, and I did want to note, like, you know, they had two 100-yard rushing performances, Ismail Mahdi and Quincy Craig.
Which is not a lot. That's not a lot.
And they did that in non-conference play. They did it against Hawaii and Kansas State, which I know is not a non-conference opponent, but it is non-conference this year. And the Wildcats were outrushed 7 times and had fewer than 100 rushing yards collectively in 2 games this year. So they definitely hit their lull, and that's why I kind of lean more towards a B minus. Now that I'm thinking about it, I'm like, damn, maybe I was a little harsh. Maybe I should have given them a solid B. But they did have some bright moments. I mean, Kedrick Risino with that 50-yard touchdown run against Cincinnati, which was, I mean, a really key score in that game. And then Quincy Craig, I thought his 24-yard touchdown run at the end of the Kansas game was an impressive moment. He also had a touchdown catch earlier in that, which tied Fifita for the career passing touchdowns record. So there was some good stuff. Definitely hit their lull. But, hey, good news for this group is they're going to have some familiar faces back next year. This year was kind of outside of Kedrick Risino. It was kind of a completely definitely a makeover in that room. But now they're going to have some continuity with Kedrick Risino, not Ismail Mahdi. He's graduating. Quincy Craig. Those guys will be back. They're bringing back the freshmen. They love Cornelius Warren. They love Wesley Yarbrough. So I think those four guys, and then you know, they're adding Brandon Smith, who's a really promising freshman out of the Bay Area. So that group should be a lot of fun to watch next year.
Yeah, they're in good shape for the most part at most of the skill positions. And we'll get to the portal in a minute. But unlike, you know, a lot of their competitors, their peers, like, they don't need a quarterback. They don't really need running backs out of the portal. They did add one wide receiver and they might add one more, and they definitely need tight ends, and they're addressing that position. But, you know, those quote unquote glamour positions, they're pretty well set up for success with quality players, promising players, and good depth. And running back certainly exemplifies that.
Which sets it up for receivers / tight ends. Mm-hmm. I gave them a B+.
You upgraded an entire grade on this one.
I know.
Explain yourself, Justin, from C+ to B+.
And a big part of it was Chris Hudson, man.
Yeah.
I mean, he was a dude in the second half of the year. Turned into Arizona's leading receiver. And even with the rise of Chris Hudson, you still saw the flashes of Javon Watley and why they brought him in there. I mean, that touchdown catch in the back of the end zone in the Holiday Bowl, very impressive play by him, very fast. He was Arizona's leading receiver for most of the year. And then, I mean, really like the last like 4 games of the year, Chris Hudson just completely took off and went on another gear. And I also think that the overall group itself, you didn't have a Tetero McMillan on your roster, but I think collectively Arizona's receivers showed a lot of good stuff. And Chris Hudson was the leader in that. Javon Watley had a lot of good stuff. Trey Spivey and all of his touchdown grabs this year. And the fact that he had so many touchdowns and wasn't like the guy that was, you know, having a lion's share of the catches, I thought was really impressive. So he's a very hard runner. And a guy that's very, they always say, intentional. Like, he is, as soon as he gets the ball, man, he is trying to find that freaking end zone. I know a lot of people are, but the way that Trey Spivey is, he's just a very aggressive runner, and they really like that. I think that's going to bode well for him next season. And then on top of that, you know, the tight ends really took a hit, right, with Tyler Powell and Kean Burnett, you know, leaving the team. Tyler Powell, he will be back, but, you know, he suffered a season-ending leg injury. But Cameron Barmore hit another switch in the last few games of the year. So I think so many players that were kind of quiet in the first half of the season how they were able to emerge in the second half. That's why I really bumped them up another grade.
I think totally fair. Cameron Barmore, I think if he had another year here, would have turned himself into a draftable prospect.
Oh, yeah.
Honestly, like he's a really good athlete. He's just had a big adjustment coming from Mercyhurst, like basically going from pseudo wide receiver to inline tight end. I mean, that's a huge change, and he just got better and better as the season went along. I think that position's really well coached too by Josh Miller, who is kind of partners with Seth Dagey, and they are clearly having a much bigger influence on the portal this year. So I talked to Trey Spivey when we had our little media day before the team left for San Diego, and I was like, hey man, why didn't you play baseball, you know, like your dad? And he said he had a partially torn UCL in high school. And he was going to be a pitcher. He was going to go in kind of a little different direction from his father, who was an infielder. And Trey said he was going to be a pitcher. And you could, hey man, if you look at him, like, whoa, okay, I get it. Like you're long and lean, and you know, but the UCL situation led him to football. Like, he didn't want to have surgery and sit out and do all of that stuff. So he decided to play football instead. But hey, you know what? Like, hey, you're going to do a trick play, maybe throw a throwback pass or something. Maybe Trey Spivey is someone you want pulling the trigger on that, since he's got that baseball background. You know, he can throw.
Kudos to Junior, because I would have saw that Ohtani contract and be like, no. This is what you're doing, man. It's in your genes. You're going to do it. I'm totally kidding, of course. But Cameron Barmore screams Chiefs practice squad player, right? Like, that guy's going to be playing in Kansas City, whether it's a practice squad player or on the active roster.
Yeah.
But yeah, some really good receivers as well that are returning, like Trey Spivey's coming mm-hmm. back. Geo Richardson, Isaiah mm-hmm. Mizell, those guys are coming back as well. And I mean, that
jump, good one's coming in too.
Here. Yeah, it's gonna be good. Oh yeah,
RJ Mosley.
RJ Mosley is big time. They also just added DJ Jordan from USC, who kind of gives me a little bit of like Chris Hudson vibes as far mm-hmm. as being a former highly touted recruit out of Los Angeles, and then went to
similar dimensions too.
Yeah. And I think DJ might turn into something. He had a lot of good offers coming out of high school when I was looking at it, because he played at Sierra Canyon. And I'm pretty sure we watched him play in high school, Lev, and we just had no idea. When we went to go watch Elijah Payne, the offensive lineman, didn't they was he at Sierra Canyon or played against Sierra Canyon or something like that? I just know Sierra Canyon was involved. And I'm like, man, the number of high school football games that Lev and I attended, and there's just like some random standout player that we're just not even paying attention to.
You could almost do like the Servite Bosco game that we saw. In 20, what year would that have been? 22? 21?
21, yeah.
You could almost do a documentary on that one.
Yeah.
Like there were probably like 20 college players.
Yeah.
In that game, which is a really high total. What you got going at the offensive line for your final grade?
So O-line, I gave them a solid B. Maybe this could have been a little bit lower considering the running backs grade and you know how many sacks they gave up this year. But I thought the continuity was much better this year than it was last year. And that's why I was, you know, really high on them, because you know, Ty Buchanan and Tristan Bounds, I thought those guys were great at offensive tackle, or at least really good, right? And then Kiana DeCambra, the fact that this man had never played center ever in his life, and then he comes in and just falls into that position, and it's like the transition, there was no growing pains or anything. Like I was worried in this Seth Dagey system, because you're in pistol and shotgun every single play. I was waiting for Kiana DeCambra to have a bad snap this year. I was like, it might happen, because he's never done it before. And you know what? If you've never played the position, it's hard to consistently have that shotgun snap. And he perfected it, didn't have any bad snaps. I thought Kiana DeCambra was great at center. And then Alexander Deust is a really solid right guard, has a really good frame, and his second year as a starter. I had no issues with the way he played. It's just, you know, you get to the end of the season, guys get banged up, and they had to put in their fill-in tackles, Orino Tapatotai and Matthew Lotto. And then you saw in that game, kind of similar to the Alamo Bowl, just how valuable really good tackles are. So I give them a solid B.
I would agree that, yeah. I think B is very fair. Tristan Bounds on the right side just got better and better as the season went along. Someone who had not locked down a starting position really heading into the year and became a dude and before getting hurt. As you mentioned, Ty Buchanan also got hurt, and that really did affect them. Chuba Maai was a good story. Someone who, I mean, he moved from defensive line to offensive line, like injury prone. Like, is he going to be in good enough shape to play in the system, to play a whole season? And he did. He played the whole year, had one game where he missed a little bit of time, but he was a warrior for them, a really good leader. He was the guy always in the huddle before the game, during warmups, who would fire the team up. So I thought the line was vastly improved this year. They're going to have to rebuild it again since they're losing most of those guys, but I think the confidence level in Josh Oglesby's ability to do that and bring that group together is a lot higher this offseason than it was last offseason.
All right, now let's go to the defensive side of the ball. Mm-hmm. Starting off with the D-line, the guys in the trenches. I gave them a B-, maybe could have given them a B. This is like a B minus. That's like an 83, right? 80. Yeah. 83. We're almost in the solid B range. But I thought you
get a lot of those kind of grades when you're in school, Justin?
Oh yeah, absolutely, man. Are you kidding me? I got A's in PE and whatnot, but, no, I was what they call the hall of very good student.
I was
never like a brainiac or a super smart guy, but what I did do was I applied myself. Like,
heck yeah.
I made sure I'm like, hey man, you can, you know, have fun, but also like apply yourself and be connected in the curriculum. And that's what helped me get along through school.
Yeah. Like when I think if people even look at resumes anymore and it's not being done by AI, but like when they look at your resume, they look more at your experience than your GPA.
Yeah.
Right. So internships, clips, you know, in our particular industry, if you had a reel, quote unquote, like
reel
of like an audio reel or even video, those things mean a lot more than good grades.
Not one time has anybody asked me what my GPA was in school.
Right.
Not once. It's cool. It's cool to have, but in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't really matter. Experience is always helpful. But going back to D-line, I thought Coach Salavea did a great job with this group. I thought that what he did with Tia Savea, I thought hit another gear this year.
Yep.
I thought that Deshaun McKnight was one of the more productive interior defensive linemen as far as like making stops at the line of scrimmage, making sure that, you know, guys aren't getting chunk runs. So the interior guys I thought were good. And then Trey Smith unfortunately suffered a season ending shoulder injury. Come to find out it was a shoulder, not a leg. But he's going to be back next year. He'll be back and better than ever, be one of Arizona's team captains. But man, I loved what I saw out of Leroy Palu. I loved what I saw out of Mace Pesse for a freshman to do what he did this year. That's impressive. And you know, they had some other guys sprinkled in the mix, like Dominic Lalesio as well. Julian Savianaya got in there. We saw Zach Siulepa, the big, nearly 400-pound guy from Australia/New Zealand. He made his Arizona debut. That's going to be a project in the offseason. They're working to, you know, shed some weight. I mean, who isn't in 2026? That's one of my many resolutions. But I just thought that this defensive line, it was pretty solid. And I feel like, you know, when Joe Salavea continues to recruit the players that he is targeting, then that I think we're really going to see that unit, you know, go to another level. But I thought this year's unit was pretty solid considering the availability.
Yeah. I think that your grade of B- is fair. We're putting for the sake of this particular report card project, Riley Wilson and Chase Kennedy are part of the linebacker group, right? So yeah, they are, even though they're edge rushers, they're not counting toward this. Mace Pace was a huge surprise this year. I think Leroy Palu was a pleasant surprise. Really emerged as one of their better defensive linemen. The way that their defense is structured, it's, you're just not going to get like a crazy amount of sacks or TFLs or even pressures necessarily from the defensive linemen. They kind of set things up for linebacker blitzes. Safeties end up making a lot of tackles. So you don't necessarily see it in the stats, but those guys played a big role in their overall defensive improvement.
Linebackers now. Mm-hmm. I gave them an A minus.
Yeah.
Is that it? Am I being lenient to the star players? Well, I guess the star players are in the
secondary. I'd say maybe B plus would be closer to what I would have thought, but I mean, look, man, Chase Kennedy had the most pressures on the team. Riley Wilson, once he became a regular, is making all kinds of plays all over the place. Tay Brown, I thought, one of the most improved players on the team. I was not sure coming into the season, even early in the season, if Tay Brown was that guy. And he turned out to be that guy. Like, he's a really good, solid college middle linebacker. Max Harris had a good year. In his 1 year at Arizona, Myron Robinson was super promising before he got injured. Jabari Mann flashed in spots. So I think if you include those edge guys, and they are considered linebackers, Chase and Riley, that something in the B plus A minus range is pretty fair.
Max Harris was, in my opinion, one of the more surprising players of just Arizona's team in general. I had no expectations for Max Harris when they signed him from Texas State. And I think that's what makes the scouting department and this coaching staff pretty unique and special, is that they have a good eye for talent, or at least they showed that in the last year. I mean, I didn't think Max Harris coming from Texas State or DeShaun McKnight from UT Martin, Riley Wilson from Montana, and look at what all those guys did.
Yeah, let's be honest here. Like, Arizona does not have the same kind of budget for its roster that, say, Texas Tech has, or Ohio State, or Miami, right? So they have to find some hidden gems out there from the lower levels. And I think the coaching staff and the personnel department did a really good job this last offseason. The personnel department has changed a little bit this year with GM and director of scouting moving on. But the coaching staff is in place. And I think that it seems like they're addressing their needs so far, and we'll get into the portal here shortly, but you make a very good point. Like, we didn't know what to expect from a lot of these guys coming from the G5 level or the FCS level, and they hit on several of them.
Absolutely. All right. Now the last position group for the secondary, before we move on to special teams, defensive backs. Mm-hmm. I gave them an A minus in the progress report. They were a solid A. But because of the opt-outs, and because of the results of the opt-outs, I knocked them down a little bit. But you know what? They had an 89.9, and I wasn't a jerk about it. And I was like, okay, young man, you will get an A-minus
for this. I would say, honestly, like, if you were just regular season only, I would say A+.
Oh, for sure.
Right? Because they were like a top 10 pass defense, the most or among the most interceptions in the league, 8 straight games under 200 yards passing. Not only the safeties and Traydon Stukes, who we talked about before, but Michael Dansby had a great year. Like, I believe he gave up 16 catches and 46 targets for the season.
Impressive.
That's really, really good. Javion Cole was among the Big 12 leaders in interceptions. He played really. Aiden Garnes, who a lot of people were like, oh, West Virginia people were like, oh, he's not that good. He had a really good year too. I loved how physical he was in the Holiday Bowl, knowing that he had to move inside, right? Mm-hmm. And play that nickel position where he had played a lot in spring. Really great job by those guys. Chip Viney is a coach we don't talk about very much. their cornerbacks coach. I think he did a really good job. Brett Arcee's the safeties coach, did a really good job of taking Danny Gonzalez's like concepts and teaching them to the players, and then those players executing those concepts on a week in, week out basis. I would have stuck with an A, but I can see why you went A minus.
Yeah,
because of that first half of the Holiday Bowl.
So Arizona led college football in takeaways per game at 2.5, and they had more takeaways with 31 than touchdowns allowed at 28. You're taking the ball away more than you're allowing touchdowns. Good stuff there. They also led the Big 12 with 22 interceptions, which is also the second most nationally. So Arizona secondary, those guys turned into a no-fly zone. And I'm really glad that you brought up Michael Dansby, because I thought he was more of one of Arizona's underrated defensive backs. And, you know, one play that doesn't get talked about a lot is his pass breakup against Cincinnati. It was late in that game, and Brendan Sorsby just fired a deep pass. And I could have swore Lev, I was like, oh, he's got it. And Michael Dansby, at like the very last second, went up and just tipped the ball away. And it was a big play at that moment in the game. And it really helped Arizona, you know, get some momentum and finish off that game in Cincinnati.
Yeah. Dansby, too, by the way, someone to keep an eye on for draft season. I don't know if he's going to get drafted, but I think he's going to work out really well. He was a track guy in high school. So when you pair that athleticism with the improvement and productivity that he had this year, he'll be a UDFA at the worst.
Absolutely. And then Trayden Stukes and Dalton Johnson, those guys were all Big 12 first team selections. Stukes was a third team AP All-American, first time in Arizona defensive player has been an AP All-American since Scooby Wright in 2014. The first time that Arizona's had multiple defensive backs on the first team all-conference team since Bob White and Jackie Wallace in 1972. So very historic seasons for those defensive backs. And then Genesis Smith, he also got some third team all-Big 12 love as well. All right, now moving on to the kicking game, special teams. So I gave this unit a C. Maybe I could have given them a C+, but Arizona kicker Michael Salgado Medina, nicknamed Money Mike by Brent Brennan, he finished 19 for 31 at kicking field goals. That is the most misses in a season for Arizona since 1999. But some of those misses, not all his fault, right? There were some snapping inconsistencies, and I think it's good for Arizona to lock in a long snapper in the transfer portal and Drew Nicholson. They also have Broden Mullen on their team as well. So having two snappers that can go through the entire spring, go through the entire summer with those guys, that operation is so key. That chemistry is so key, right? Like we're talking about, you know, in the past, they've had Seth McKellar, who was there for 5 years, and Kyle Ostendorp was the holder. And of course, Tyler Loop was the kicker. So they had a system, they had an operation down pat. That was not the case this year. So maybe the operation can clean itself. But, you know, Salgado Medina, he was 5 for 12 at field goals between 40 and 49 yards. But he did hit a 57-yarder against Oklahoma State and a big-time 51-yarder against Cincinnati. So he did have his good moments this year. And then Isaac Levison, the punter from Australia, was 9th in the Big 12 in punting average at 42.6 yards per game. And then I thought maybe the brightest spots for special teams – one, Ian Wagner, who had 68 touchbacks in 78 attempts, which is an 87% clip. But at one point in time, he was at like a 95% touchback rate. He just,
Hey, you know what? Like sometimes they just bring the ball out. Like the first kickoff of the Holiday Bowl, they decided to take it out of the end zone.
Yeah.
So it happens. Also that, you know, he does benefit a little bit from our dry air here, plus the elevation in Tucson, which is like 2,400 feet. You're at ground zero in San Diego. Like you are right at sea level, and it's damp and it's moist. And he still did a pretty good job. He was great at, I thought he was really good at, as a holder too, for the most part. Like yeah, a lot of those snaps were not where they needed to be, and he was able to get the ball down, but it does, as you mentioned, throw off the whole operation. To me, he was like the special teams MVP of the season.
Yeah. Holder, the way what he did on kickoff, absolutely. And then another bright spot was Luke Weisong.
Yeah.
Who stepped in as punt returner, had the third best return average in the Big 12 at 10.3 yards. Certainly helped him out in a handful of games with field position. And he also played other special teams positions as well. And, you know, Luke Weisong, I'm not sure what the future holds for him, but it would not surprise me if he got a look or two for a camp this year as like a special teams guy. And Luke even said it himself this season. He's like, listen, if you want to play in the NFL, you want to play at the next level, you got to do special teams. You got to be a part of it. And you have to really just kind of own your craft in that space. So kudos to Luke for having that maturity and kind of that awareness to realize, hey, if I want to make it to the next level, this is what I got to do.
Yeah. And probably should have been the punt returner from the start of the season. Yeah. It was Jeremiah Patterson at the outset, and then they decided to go in another direction. And I thought Luke, for the most part, made really good decisions back there. A lot of punt returning is making the right call. Like, should I fair catch it? Should I try to return it? Should I pick it up off the bounce? And I'd say most of the decisions he made in that area were pretty solid.
Absolutely. All right, Lev, we still got a couple things to address. We still have some mailbag questions as well, but real quick, what's your take on this whole Damon Williams situation at UW? So former friends, right? I mean, they're not, you know, former friends, I guess, people that we used to see here down in Tucson, Arizona, but our good buddy Jed Fish is dealing with some issues up there in Seattle. So former Arizona quarterback signee, Damon Williams, who is really the headline recruit for Arizona's 2024 recruiting class before Jed went to Washington. He is now entering the transfer portal, or at least announced that he plans on entering the transfer portal. But there's one problem. He signed a contract with Washington, and he's going to be the contract was for him to be back next year. And he's also got NIL opportunities and other things that's going to get him, what, $4 million or something like that? Or that's the reported amount that he was going to make at Washington if he stayed with the Huskies. But now he's going to enter the portal, and all signs look at him going to LSU and joining Lane Kiffin, who recruited Damon Williams to Ole Miss before he flipped to Arizona. So Lane Kiffin and Damon Williams, they have a connection there. But Washington, they're like, whoa, 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 wait a second. You signed this contract, and now you're trying to go. You gotta follow orders here, man. You gotta obey your contract. This is what you signed. And so lawyers are getting involved. This seems like a very messy situation in Seattle. Another thing that I just thought was kind of, I wouldn't say distasteful, but maybe he just didn't have awareness, was the fact that he announced it while the entire team and a lot of other members of the UW athletic department were at a memorial service for a student athlete who lost her life to cancer. And so dropping this on Instagram during that service, I was like, come on, dude, somebody in your camp should have told you when would be the appropriate time to release that. But I don't know what's going to happen from this. Maybe there is some order in college athletics to where now players, hey, if you sign a contract, you have to stay here. But the thing is, they're not employees of the school. So I don't know what's going to come from this, Lev. What say you?
Yeah, the agency that was representing Damon Williams certainly did not advise him to do this. And in fact, they have dropped him since that happened. The same agency that represents Jed Fish. So, you know, interesting situation there. That definitely some, I'm sure there were some awkward moments behind the scenes. This was all being hashed out. Like, he had announced, or they had announced, that he was coming back maybe 4 or 5 days before this bombshell was dropped. And I think it's going to be a test case about the validity of these contracts, right? Like, what is binding? Is anything binding? You know? And there are probably legal arguments or lawsuits that can be won regarding all of these things. But there's also, I think, a lesson that you could take out of this if you're a young person, and that if you make a commitment to something, you sign your name on a piece of paper, like, you should follow through on that commitment. You should honor the contract that you signed. And I don't know. I don't think there's any shape or form that any way that he's going to be back at Washington. Like, they're pursuing legal this, that, or the other, but there's no way the team's going to take him back.
No way.
The fans are not going to welcome him back. There might be some sort of damages awarded, but God, what a crazy situation. Here's the sort of 6 degrees of Lane Kiffin of all of this is he was initially committed to Ole Miss when Lane Kiffin was their coach, and Jed Fish and his staff flipped him from Ole Miss to Arizona. Now it looks like, based on what most of the reporting is, that he's going to go play for Lane Kiffin at LSU. So it all kind of comes around. And DeMond is from, he's from the Phoenix area, right? What high school?
Basha.
Did he play? Basha. Okay. Yeah. Sensational player, by the way. I think, you know, if he does end up playing for LSU, he'll be a Heisman candidate. Like, I think he'll.
Reminds me of Bryce Young a little bit.
Yeah, sure. I mean, a little bit smaller, very athletic, dual threat type of player. Lane is obviously a great offensive coordinator. But yeah, that was a unprecedented situation, even in the wild, wild west that is the transfer portal. So as we're recording this, Justin, how many of confirmed signees does Arizona have?
Well, six.
Six, okay.
Yeah. They've got the long snapper, Drew Nicholson. They've got Georgetown linebacker, a.k.a. Riley Wilson 2.0, and Cooper Blomstrom. They've also added a couple of tight ends as well. Shane King from Southern Miss. Also, Cole Rusk from Illinois. Shane King, he was a recruit of Daigie. Daigie recruited him to Marshall. And because of Daigie going to Arizona, or I should say Marshall head coach Charles Huff going from Marshall to Southern Miss, he followed Charles Huff from Marshall to Southern Miss, and then Daigie came out here to Arizona. So Daigie and Josh Miller, they know this guy very well. They like his skill set. They like him a lot, and so they're bringing him to Arizona. He's got 4 years left of eligibility, redshirted this year, so I'm not going to sit here and say he's a project player, but he's definitely a guy that's going to be, you know, here for a couple of years to develop. And then Cole Rusk, he's a guy that's been around the block in college football. He's originally from Rock Island, Illinois, and Lev, you're very familiar with that area. Well, you're familiar with Illinois. He's actually closer to Iowa than he is like Chicago. Like, people think of Illinois and they're like, oh, he's a Chicago kid. No, this guy is blue collar, Midwestern town.
Rock Island is right on the border.
It's like Quad Cities.
Yeah. So I've definitely made that drive before, but that is the westernmost edge of Illinois, basically.
Yeah.
But I don't know what to make. Like, I don't really know. None of us really know if these players are any good. So how do you look at it? To me, it's like, are they addressing the needs that they have? Yeah. Do the moves make sense? It seems like it's a mix so far of guys who have some experience and guys who have potential. I think it was interesting after the season that, you know, we didn't really think cornerback would be that big of a need. It's suddenly become like the biggest need. They're going to basically have to rebuild the secondary. They've got a few promising young players coming back. Javion Cole is going to be back, kind of anchoring that unit, but they need 6 to 8 defensive backs, I think, out of the portal.
Yeah.
They've already got two tight ends. They might bring in a third. They've got an outside linebacker. I think they're going to add more linebackers to that group. They were playing a lot of, you know, kind of a 2-4-5 type of defense there at the end. So you need a lot of backers. Then offensive line, right? There's someone that we unable to talk about right now that we believe is going to sign, that will be the center. for next year's team, but they won't be done there. There will be more at that position. So a lot of the movement throughout college football in the portal, it feels like musical chairs. It's just like you're kind of moving from one school to another. In Arizona's case, like, they have needs. They've identified what those needs are, and it seems like they're attacking the needs. They're not bringing in, like, luxury players at positions that are already strengths or where they have a lot of guys.
Yeah, we'll see how many they add total. But, man, I was looking at the, you know, the guys that are leaving between graduation and guys that are entering the transfer portal. We're talking about now approaching 50 players leaving the program.
Yeah, it's like Brent Brennan didn't want to have that much turnover, but it's kind of happening.
Yeah.
Like, whether he likes it or not, you know, and a lot of that, they had a big senior class. So that is definitely part of it. And how many guys from Arizona have entered? Is it 18?
Yeah. Something like that. Yeah.
I mean, like, the reality is that number is probably going to be around 20 going out and 20 coming in every year, no matter what.
Yep.
And that is just the reality of college football nowadays.
But, you know, some people who are like, I've never heard of these guys. Where are all the playmakers at? I'm like, hey, you know what? You guys said the exact same thing last year about all these FCS and Group of Five guys. So hold on. You never know until you know. All right. And we'll have more transfer portal updates on Tucson.com, Wildcaster app. I've got, you know, some of the players that they're looking at on – I got their tweets on notification, so we'll see when these guys announce.
Whenever you guys listen to this, there probably will be more additions.
Yeah.
Right. So it's a very fluid situation. The portal is open until the 16th.
Yep.
Next week. January. And they could still add guys after that too. It's not like
every player
who's in the portal is going to sign by the 16th. So very busy month here in January as Arizona reshapes its roster.
Okay, Lev, we got a few mailbag questions.
Yeah, I got a few leftovers.
Yeah, let's do it.
From the regular season. I had one from Retro RV that was about strategy in the Holiday Bowl. We're not going to address that one. I just want to thank Retro RV for sending in that question. Please do not let that dissuade you from sending in questions in the future. All right, the first two of these, and there's three total, the first two are kind of related. AZ Cat John asks, with ASU increasing their assistance pool to 11 million, this puts us in a deep competitive disadvantage. What are the plans to increase our pool to a competitive number, at least 9 million? And then Sean asks, so about that Brennan contract extension. So both of these guys are asking about future resources being devoted to the coaching staff, contract extensions, etc. What is your response to those?
Yeah, they're trying to do whatever they can to make sure that the assistant coaches are fairly compensated. But I also think it says a lot about Danny Gonzalez, you know, because he told us, he's like, I've had other opportunities that were presented, but I love what Brent is doing. And I also think that Danny, and, you know, this is not sourced. I didn't, you know, ask him the follow-up question, but I'm willing to bet that those opportunities were probably other defensive coordinator jobs, or maybe they were head coaching jobs, but maybe not necessarily the right head coaching job. I've said this from time, you know, time and time again, Danny will leave if it's the right head coaching gig. Other than that, he loves Tucson, Arizona. He loves what Brent is building here. But with that being said, Brent is also, you know, not going to sit there and be like, oh, thank you guys, I appreciate your commitment and your loyalty. Okay, whatever. And just, you know, not address the whole contract situation. Brent has said he is trying very hard and they're working on some deals to make sure that those guys, the coordinators, are fairly compensated and maybe even the position coaches too. So that'll be TBD, the timeline. I honestly could not give you a time of when those contract extensions will be in place, but I would imagine within the calendar year, we will see those guys get a bump in pay.
Barring something unexpected, and anything can happen, NFL jobs are opening, there's still movement in the greater coaching carousel. They're bringing both coordinators back. They are bringing Joe Salavea back. They're bringing most of their coaching staff back. The only assistant who's left was Alonzo Carter, who got a head coaching job, right? Yeah. And he's a little bit older guy. Like, he had to take that opportunity when it arose. So, you know, continuity, very important for Brent Brennan, and mission accomplished in that regard. As far as coaching staff continuity, they did lose their general manager and director of scouting. They quickly replaced them. Those guys are really important. Does Brent Brennan deserve a contract extension? Probably so, but he is not someone who like is going to drive a hard bargain or make a huge stink about it, right? Like, it's just, he would rather take care of his staff and his guys. And he is one of the lowest paid coaches in all of Power Four. And I don't think he cares.
No.
Like, he makes plenty enough money. What is somewhere like over what, around 3.5 million or so total compensation per year. He's got a nice house here in Tucson where he's, you know, been hosting these portal recruits. Like, he is happy. He loves it here. He knows he's in a good spot. When the time comes, he will happily sign on the dotted line to remain Arizona's coach for as long as they'll have him.
The lifestyle with that kind of money in Tucson, Arizona, you live like a king. And so Brent is like, this is a guy that was, that spent the last how many years in San Jose, California, of all places. That stuff like that matters to these guys because they've experienced, they've lived both lives. They've lived the Bay Area lifestyle, and they live the Tucson lifestyle. They will take the Tucson lifestyle every day of the week and twice on Sunday.
We heard some tales from some of the guys on the staff about how much they spent on daycare, childcare, and it was like insane. Like, it would just make your head explode. So your salary goes a little further here in Tucson than it does in the Bay Area. Okay.
Absolutely.
I got one more question here. This one comes from Paul Pierce. Not that Paul Pierce. As far as we know.
The truth, okay,
this is a really good one, though. I love this question. There is a widespread belief that I have begun to question that Noah Fifita is not an NFL prospect because of his height. Are we sure, though, he's not better than Chris Olatokun? That's the guy who played for the Chiefs at the end of the season. Mm. He can't compete with Max Brosmer. That's the guy who played for the Vikings at the end of the season. And Paul Pierce says, really? Great question. We will see a year from now what the NFL thinks of Noah Fifita. He will be at a huge disadvantage because of his height. He is listed at 5'11", I think. He is not 5'11". Let's just say it right now. He's probably 5'7". Okay. There have not been a lot of quarterbacks that height who have had success in the NFL. You have to go way back to Doug Flutie. Drew Brees, probably 6 feet tall, maybe a shade under. Russell Wilson, 5'11 or so, but a really good athlete.
Kyler, same deal.
Kyler's what, 5'10, 5'11, mixed reviews, but he was the first pick in the draft. So obviously they overlooked that. Bryce Young is on the smaller side, but not as small as Noah. So that's going to be a challenge for him. Yeah. Like, and he's made it work so far. Like, he's got all the intangibles you could want. He has a great arm. He is a good athlete. He's not like an amazing athlete. I don't think athletically he's on the same level as Bryce or Kyler. So I don't know. It's a good question. I think worst case scenario, again, you're talking about an undrafted free agent, someone who could be in a camp. Maybe he's on a practice squad. Maybe he's a backup, or maybe I'm just totally underestimating him and he's going to surprise us and be a draft pick in 2027.
You know, he may not be a draft pick. I mean, or if it is, or if he is a draft pick, it might be super late in the draft. But, you know, Noah Fifita, he's been down this road before. You know, he wasn't really recruited out of Arizona. And some could say that Arizona offered him because, you know, they wanted to get to T-Mac, right? And they wanted to, you know, use the Noah Fifita commitment as leverage to land his buddy in Tetaro McMillan. But then he proved everybody wrong when he got to Arizona. He proved that he can play at this level. And he's a really good college football player. it would not surprise me if Noah Fifita got his shot in the NFL. And I think what's going to happen is it's just going to be just like his high school recruitment. They're going to put him under the microscope and they're not going to like the height thing. And, you know, sometimes there are, you know, routes of that guys run where maybe if Noah was 6 inches taller, maybe he'd see him running down the field. But I feel like Noah has made a lot of impressive throws in his time. He has shown that he can quarterback an offense. He's adjusted to three different types of offenses and look good in, I mean, whatever that offense was in 2024, it was whatever, but he had his bright moments. But three different offenses, he's able to absorb information and thrive. And so, yeah, he might get overlooked going into the NFL, but, you know, if, you know, there's a situation where you got a Hosmer plan or you have, you know, the backups that are being thrown into it, maybe Noah Fifita gets his shot in the NFL and all of a sudden, like at Arizona, either wills his team to victory in the fourth quarter or just steps up and throws and impresses a lot of people. I think maybe that's how he gets his NFL shot. But I think he definitely deserves at least a look.
Yeah, I mean, the NFL, and this is true for all of the professional leagues, I mean, they look at traits, right? They look at physical traits so much, size, speed, athleticism, projectability. And he's, you know, he's going to suffer in those areas, right? I mean, like, he's small, but he has a really good arm. He's flexible. He's resourceful, great leader. Whatever happens, I think we are all going to be rooting for him because he's going to leave here as maybe the greatest overall player in Arizona football history.
I say I put him on the Mount Rushmore already, and that's going into his final season. So. Mm.
Good one. Maybe that could be a topic for us in the future.
Oh. Mount Rushmore of Arizona football.
Have we ever done that for across the sports?
We should.
I mean, we're always looking for summer projects, so just jot that one down. That could be a summer project for us for next year.
The Mount Rushmore of Arizona football. I'd say Ricky football, Hunt,
yeah. No basketball, women's basketball.
Oh man, basketball. It's like, do you do players or do you include coaches? Because if you include coaches,
you got to have loot. You got to have loot, right?
Yeah,
I think you do include coaches.
Yeah.
This is great podcasting, by the way.
I like just
hashing out story ideas.
I like it.
I have one more topic for us. Okay. Yeah, okay. I do. I have one more topic, and that is Big 12 Bowl Bonanza, which wrapped up the season-long Big 12 Bonanza picking contest among you and me and our guy, Jordan Hamm, who joined us throughout the season. Going into the last segment of this, and there were 8 games that we picked, and we would have kept picking Texas Tech as long as they were still alive, and they are no longer. Justin had a 1-game lead in the in picks against the spread over Jordan. I was well behind. I tried to throw in some curveballs in the postseason. Despite the fact that I did that and went against you guys in certain games, and we didn't all have the same picks, we all had the exact same record, Justin, 5-3 straight up, 4-4 against the spread. So there was no change in the standings whatsoever. Justin is your champion. Very nice. Very nice.
Let's go.
And with a very, very NFC South-esque record of 52-56. So you should be very proud of yourself. 4 games under 500, and you are the best of the three. Oh, you got a trophy. Very nice. So congratulations to Justin.
Thank you.
He's the king of the hill.
Thank you. 2 straight years, baby. Back to back. Back to back like a lethal weapon.
A dynasty, one might argue.
We're not approaching dynasty yet. Next year, if we three-peat, then we'll be at the dynasty. But all right, we're recording this right before the Fiesta Bowl. National championship prediction, Lev. You going with the Crystal Ball Bowl?
Oh, man. It's so hard. Like, it's so hard to pick against Indiana, right? Like, they're just,
yeah.
They just do everything so well. They're so confident. I would love to see on some level Oregon against Miami because of the Mario Cristobal factor. And I think those are kind of the most talented teams. On the other hand, like Ole Miss against Indiana would be amazing in its own way. You'd have the possibility of a Steve Fisher-esque run by Pete Golding down there at Ole Miss after Lane Kiffin left, right? And then you'd have this upstart Indiana, which was, up until like a year ago, the losingest program of all time. So I don't know. I think Indiana's the kind of the chalk, the betting favorite. Any outcome wouldn't surprise me. I'll say Miami.
Okay.
To win it, just because I think talent-wise, they were always kind of right there. They had a couple stumbles along the way, which happens. But they've got a lot of elite talent. I like the way they're playing. I like the way their defensive line attacks people. So I'll go with the U. They'll probably lose tonight, and I'll be wrong, but that's my pick.
Man, what's happening right now? Nebraska is killing it in basketball. Indiana killing it in football. Simulation, <We're>, man. I don't get it. I don't get it. But
we're in the upside down, truly.
All right. That is our season recap of the Arizona football season. Still lots to look forward to in the offseason. We got transfer portal season. We got spring ball coming up in a few months. Lev and Bruce, we'll be recording some basketball podcasts. If you guys ever need me, I'm around to talk some hoops with you guys. So we'll keep the Wildcast podcast rolling all throughout the winter / spring months. So stay locked in. Make sure you subscribe on Apple and Spotify. Check out our work at Tucson.com, the Wildcaster mobile app. Lots to look forward to in 2026. Should be a good year. All right. Thank you guys for listening. We'll see y'all next time.
Thank you for calling the Bombas Comfort Line. Bombas make socks, slippers, tees, and underwear made with the highest quality materials. Press 1 for comfort, 2 for style, 3 for donation.
You chose style. Bombas is styles for whatever you enjoy. You can run in Bombas, lounge in Bombas, dress them up, dress them down, but always give back in Bombas. Because with every item purchased, another is donated. Bombas, comfort worth calling for. Go to bombas.com/audio and use code AUDIO for 20% off your first purchase. That's BOMBAS.com and use code AUDIO.